coming up in the sports weekender. We speak rugby with AJ Whitten as we look at the first three tests in the Dave Rennie era, the South African tour, and we preview the NPC. We go to women's rugby with Super Rugby Apiki with Christina Sue. Then we go rugby league with Joey Green as we speak NRL and Auckland Rugby League. We had an interview with Lee Piper about the crisis in New Zealand netball, football with Seamus Martin from Between Two Bears. We will also speak to Philip Tatarangi as we look back on Ryan Fox's fantastic win in the British Open, and our panel is John McBeth and Brendan Telfer. So listen in to the mid-morning voice of Sports in the 09. Good morning, everyone. Sorry about that. Good morning, everyone, and welcome into the sports weekend. God, it felt like winter out there today, didn't it? Anyway, just before we go on to our first segment of the day, big shout out to Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street West in the Auckland CBD. They have a selection of local craft and international draft beers on tap, a good selection of bottled beers, fine wines, good spirits, great food and music Wednesday through to Sunday. So make Father Ted's your location to go to. Their number is 09377 3142, or you could email them fatherteds@hotmail.com. Well, we might as well kick it off with the first free test in the Dave Rennie era begun, and I will say this right now, it has been very, very, very interesting. Here to speak to us, as he speaks to us, well, most Saturdays, it's always great to have a chat to former All Black AJ Whitten. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Peggy, and sounds like you've got a big program ahead of you, but must admit, very chilly outside, did feel it today, to be voided.
Just before we speak about the rugby, obviously a mate of yours, who's the dad of a certain good golfer, and you've known Ryan Fox, you must be absolutely happy for him.
Oh, I'm delighted. We've known, obviously, Fox, you could make around in the early halcyon days of the 80s. We always had barbecues. One thing that I guess John Hart initiated in the management was it wasn't about just training and playing the game. It was getting all the families and partners together every second Sunday. And boy, did we have some hoolies. I can't go into that, but boy, we had fun. And of course, the families, all the kids were involved. So yeah, known Ryan from such an early age, and just to see him progress into a mighty athlete on the golf course, and boy, what a buzz. And I stayed up till 4. I text Foxy beforehand. I said, your son's going to cost me a night's sleep. And I fell asleep, but Foxy said, yeah, he got her, and Adele went to bed early and did the right thing, woke up at 2 and saw their son clinch the claret jug. What an absolutely superb effort. And as I said, this mate New Zealand is proud, and he's just a good kid with it too, mate. I tell you, he's just a down-to-earth Kiwi.
Good bloke. Do you know what they say on the other channel? Great New Zealander.
Well, he's etched himself in history. No one can ever take that away. If he wins nothing else,
hangs
up the clubs, his name's on that trophy with Sir Bob Charles. So, just great to see Kiwis once again punching well above their weight. And when it's someone you sort of know personally, or especially his mum and dad, cock a hoop. Just great, mate. Great news.
Yeah, no, absolutely stunning. Good bloke. I sent him a text, congratulated him. What a good bloke. He replied back, real nice guy. Anyway, we might as well get into it. Well, the first free test of the day, any era has begun, and obviously three victories, a good win over Ireland at Eden Park over the weekend. Really impressed with Tupu Vai and at that blindside flanker position, but you know, really I think Dave Rennie would be happy with that.
Oh, yeah, I think we've seen some progress. I think it looks quite a settled squad, quite a bit of harmony in them. I think they know where they're going and the pattern they want to play, and I think that's always good. It took moments at times to get there, starting obviously with the first test against the French, which I thought was the best test. That really tested them in a contest. Italy was Yeah, a bit of a lolly scramble at times, and I think probably didn't quite go in with the right prep mentally and sort of brought it together against Ireland. Some great aspects of the match, I think certainly trying to keep that ball alive, kick when they had to. But yeah, they had to work really hard, which we expected in that front five, and a contest. Still, yeah, work to do. I think we all can see that. It's not the finished product, but they're just going to have to step up their game a wee bit because you're going across to Africa. And there's a couple of basic mistakes, especially in a few of the odd set pieces, and holding on to that that pull at times, which could be costly. And on the other hand, Ireland, no, they'd be a wee bit disappointed. A couple of soft tries they let in, and certainly not the Irish team of old, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, we look ahead to South Africa. Well, obviously, there are 35 and 36 in this squad. Maybe another 10 to be added. I look at it, Fabian Holland got through 40 minutes of a game for Otago versus Mid-Canterbury in a Shield Challenge in Alexandra. From what I hear, no issues, no problems, likely to be on the plane. No two ways about it. Then we have a look at some of the other guys that have been hanging around the squad. Rick Ioane, likely to be in the squad. And then we go to the others. I do not see any, I can be honest with you, I don't see any bolters in this one, AJ. They are saying a couple of players that could be looked for is Simesi Tupu-Taliola, who played for Moana Pacifica, or you could be looking at Lucas Casey from the Highlanders. But really, I think it's pretty much, it's going to have a familiar name to it. The guys that have been in the squad or around the squad are pretty much in.
Well, I think, facts be facts across to Africa, and not really a tour to blood. Some 20-year-olds, thinking of our under-20s. Look, there may be one, like you mentioned, Rick Casey, is all fit. It certainly wouldn't surprise me if he's there, especially on the hard turf. And he's an extremely physical number seven. So I think he's certainly got the attributes that would come in handy midweek on tour and cover, because I think there could be an attrition rate with some of these games which are going to be extremely physical. Fabian Holland is great news. We need him there. We need big men. We need big men over there and mobile. And let's hope he gets into fitness pretty quick, or he's going to have to, because it's going to be under a lot of work. I see Erasmus has announced his squad after their three pretty conclusive wins in their Nation Cups. I see, about eight or nine of coming back. Espet, I mean, Lou de Jager, we just mentioned the locks. Well, there's two giant men. Colucci's back, of course, their enigmatic leader. Pollard, who just keeps going no matter what the age. Keepers, I think he's a pensioner, and he's still drawing a salary on the field.
I don't think he's close to your age yet.
He's just talent. And so they're not afraid to go back to the old experience. And that Sasha, I think, Fernberg, Norma Glusu's back. So they've been missing some players. They've had some new ones playing that I hadn't seen before. He's getting blooding his squad for this epic tour of the All Blacks. And, you're going to need some big men, mobile men on deck. And, can't wait for it to happen. But it's they've got an extremely physical and experienced squad.
Absolutely. Well, NPC starts next week. You'll be hobnobbing it down in my hometown. I hope you behave yourself down there too, because, when I go down there, they always mention about that AJ giving me a hard time, and I always tell them it's all a bit of fun. But anyway, we look at this NPC, and I think it's the best competition. I love it. It is even, and you look at the contenders. Obviously, Canterbury, always there or thereabouts. Last year's champions, Otago, they've really got a good, they've brought together a good squad. You never rush out Waikato, Hawke's Bay, Tasman's. But then we look in the Auckland region, and I'm looking at Auckland, North Harbour, and Cairns Manukau. We'll start off Cairns Manukau. AJ, I'm going to say this right now. What Rion Graham does to that squad, they basically punch way above their weight. They've technically only got five premier sides to choose from, and somehow Rion Graham gets them up towards playoffs, which is last year they were the only team within the Auckland, Greater Auckland region to make it.
Yeah.
I think it'll be interesting. I suspect if they were to make the playoffs, it's another great achievement. Then I go to North Harbour. I just feel, obviously, Bryn Hall's back for them. I ran into Bryn at a hospitality establishment. And, he's all ready to go. Obviously, he's got some big aims for him to play 100 games for North Harbour. And then we look at Auckland. Now, I know that Auckland's close to your heart. We're in the blue and white jumper, but I will say this, obviously they've made some changes within the coaching setup. Stephen Bates remains, but they brought in Mark Hodgson, who was a very good coach for Hawke's Bay and was involved in the Western Force.
Yep, he was. He's the assistant coach there, and they certainly had a pretty consistent season. I met them a couple of weeks ago, and Hadley Parks, of course, has been brought in to the coaching ranks as well. So, yeah, first of all, with Auckland, I'm going down for the first round with Auckland to go down to Takaha, my first time, so looking forward to that, to play the mighty red and black. And they're looking at a crowd possibly of 20,000 plus, so
wow.
Watch out. So a good baptism of fire for the blue and white. We'll certainly see where they are. And let's be frank, it's going to be one hell of a mission. But with wearing that jersey and playing for Auckland, you take that responsibility on board. So I'll be down there, of course. I'll be in some sort of corporate hospitality, as I do.
What a surprise, AJ on the donut again. What a surprise.
Well, it's something called friends, Peggy.
I've got a feeling I know that one of our sponsors who's from down there may be at that. So I'm going to have a word to them to keep an eye on you. Have a very...
Yeah, I'll be down there.
Yeah, you just need to... Yeah.
It'll be great. But you mentioned, so they've got a front up, and that's the one on Saturday. Now, that'll be a big one. You mentioned counties. Hats off to them last year. Could have nearly made the semi-finals. They had Canterbury in all sorts of trouble and lost it just in the end there. I think the success out of counties is you play in counties, you get selected in counties. So you've got to play for a club rugby out there. They've pitched their tent and said that's it. So they get a lot of buy-in, develop a good culture, knowing that you've got an opportunity to represent your province because you're playing in the area. With most of them, of course, have players, yes, established in the area, but they do bring players in from other parts of the country. And then we, of course, go to North Harbour, which has always battled. Again, but like Auckland, had a very average season. And Bryn Hall can only be a great asset to come back. Just, his experience. He's been around a long time. So let's see what he can add. But he's certainly got to have the people up front to give him that delivery and that foundation to work his magic. So you mentioned the NPC, love it. It's tribal. Some great teams involved. The Naki, the Hawke's Bay you mentioned. Love their 40 down there. That could be the perennial favourites. But it all starts from scratch, and just can't wait for the competition to come off because it is a competition, and we're not playing just to try and make a top six or eight, whatever it is, with some of these other competitions that I see around to make up the numbers. So, good luck. I can't wait. It's going to be a busy season for me watching TV, I tell you.
Absolutely. Yeah, you've got a hard job there, AJ. Anyway, mate, what's the plans for the weekend, mate?
Oh, well, I'm just having... this one off. Had a busy last week, of course, with Test Week, and you yourself and Bongo had dinners and lunches. Caught up with the gala dinner with Auckland, raised some great money for the pro sport young girls and boys development. Peter Thompson, of course, was generous as he does. Caught up with some old mates, David Kirk. The chairman of New Zealand Rugby was there, Kevin Borovich. Hadn't seen him for a while.
Kevin, yeah.
And Herb Schuller. My word, he was a good player in his day too. He was a nuggety bugger. And just catching up and having a laugh. And, of course, we just talk about those days. And
hey, good
the
you were.
Of rugby. You can just reminisce and just catch up with some good people. And just loved every minute of it. Yeah, catching up with a lot of... And it gets who was asking after you too the other day.
Who?
No one, as usual. But
you got me. You That's get me right, all the time. And on that note, AJ, you have a wonderful weekend. Obviously, behave yourself down in Christchurch. I'll have a lot of spies out down there just keeping an eye. And a lot
of down there for a good time, and hopefully a winning one, Piggy.
Yeah, well, I'm going to ring up a couple of my mates at bars to say keep an eye on that, AJ, and especially if he and knowing the people that are going to be good people at Christchurch, you'll be in a corporate box with, they'll get to know you, they'll get to know a lager, a rum, a lager, wine, and a rum, and they'll probably carry out.
Don't worry, Peggy. We'll let you know next week. I'll say hello to all your friends. One at least.
Thank you very much. Have a great weekend, AJ. Cheers. Cheers. Okay, that was AJ Wetton. Always entertaining as he is. Next up, we're going to talk some Super Rugby Aupiki, the big grand final at One New Zealand Stadium between Matatu and Blues and the Blues Woman. Let's go and play some music. And next up, we should have Christina Sue.
The taste of my tears when they run down my face, yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Reminds me of all of the years and the dreams I've been chasing. Fueled in the fire inside so the fears I can face. Cause mama never told me nothing about being complacent. So you can knock me down, but I won't stay on the ground. Until I know I made it, I'll never know what second place is. No pain, no doubt, till the lights go out. Just a little more makes it worth it all. When I hear the call, will I rise or fall? I know all my roads lead to something gold. So I will walk them all, I will walk them all. You can knock me down, but I won't stay on the ground. Can't stop believing I'm the greatest. Hearts breaking till I know. It feels like I don't want to go any farther. The only way I know to keep on is keep pushing hard.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Sports Weekend. Well, Christina Sue, we're going to go to that interview a bit later. So just before we go to this, I've decided to bring Lee Piper's segment forward. So this is brought to you by Force Electrical. First thing about Force Electrical, they were started in 2014 by my good mate Nick Brakovich and have grown into a trusted name across the wider region with a... why choose them? First of all, they're reliable. They have knowledge that sets them apart. They stay ahead of the latest industry standards. And what they do? Well, what can't they do? They have a full range of, they basically do residential, commercial, ongoing electrical maintenance, solar panel systems with inverters and battery storage and ELV solutions. So in the electrical business, give Force Electrical a call. Their number is 021-628-628 and 341, or you can email Nick at forceelectrical.co.nz. Been thrown a bit off schedule, but so hopefully this will cover in the meantime, and then we'll go to Joey Green next. So these things happen, but we have to get the interview in. So let's have a chat. Let's have a quick chat to Lee Piper.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Sports Weekend. This is a pre-record, and obviously the professional game of netball, it is at crisis mode in this country. Here to speak to us, well, we know him as the mouth of the South, but I have to say this. He was a former board member of Netball New Zealand, and he also was a... he's also represented several players, Silver Ferns, and several ANZ Premiership players. Good morning, Lee Piper. How are you?
Hey, good morning. How are we?
Yeah, good. But if you're a netball fan, not good at all, Lee. What is the situation? Will we have a professional competition next year? We've heard rumours ANZ have said they're out. No broadcast deal. What's it looking like?
Well, I'd like to give you a more definitive answer than I don't know, but the reality is I just simply don't know. And I think Netball New Zealand, and we heard from Alistair Carruthers, have been the board chair yesterday via the media that, you know, they were working on the options. What's astounding is that there are no options, that there is nothing definitive on the table, that they aren't sitting down with the players or the franchises and saying, okay, this is the options for next year. Here's the four options. How can we work together to get something? Now, you and I talked about this 2 years ago. I said to you on this very show that the Sky deal was done, that they had, and they really, really struggled to bring Sky back for the 25 season. They did. But they knew that was it. It was like, look, we'll do it one more year and then we are definitely out. But there's a whole lot of questions that go unanswered here, mate. What did they do throughout 2025? Who did they talk to? What broadcasting deals did they try and put up? Now, they ended up in a situation at the end of 25 into 26 where they moved over to TVNZ. Mm. Now, it's a very, very loose secret that they got nothing for the deal. They didn't get anything. And in fact, in the end, they had to fork out cash to pay for a lot of the production. Again, why? Like, if Netball's... And we saw the numbers this week that were pretty good, you know, for the netball viewership, as you would expect on free-to-air. So how do you get yourself into a situation where you have one option that ends up with you paying on arguably the premier women's sport in New Zealand? Then you have to say, okay, well, even if that was the case, and that's a disaster in itself, but let's assume that that is the case, because it is the case, what is the commercial team doing? Because what we know with free-to-air coverage, Avon, is that your audience is far, far greater than what you have on pay-per-view. It's just a numbers game. And the product this year, I would argue, was pretty good. We had the Steel, the Tactics, and the Mystics as the three. We had the Stars nipping at the heels, and the Pulse and the Magic on their day, capable of upsetting any of those teams. So the product was actually pretty good. So where's the money? Where's the commercial deals? Where's the repackaging of commercial deals up to the fact that you can then cover that production and some? Now we get to the end of 2026, and we're outside the player contracting window. The competition's finished weeks ago. The players, the player association, and the public know nothing. And the reason they know nothing is because there's nothing to report. There's no competition. There's no proposed competition. There's no options. There's no broadcast deal. All that we know is that players are seeking to go overseas. Now, again, that's fine, but you're not going to stick 60 players from New Zealand in an Australian competition or an English competition. We're just not. That's just not going to happen. Now, the leading players potentially will get opportunities. They'll take them. So your leading players, where possible, are gone. So I'd wipe out about another 6 to 10. We had 7 last year, double it. So say you've got 14. Mm-hmm. That's a team and a half. So your 14, 15 best players are now playing offshore. The young players, I wouldn't say they're not so much of a problem, but they are in the start of their careers. They've got less options, they're paid poorly, some of them are studying and balancing life, work-life balancing, because the remuneration at that level is not that great. They're probably less affected. It's those middle players that is going to destroy this, because players that are around 27, 28, 29, who make up the guts of your team, they're, and don't read anything into this, but they're the Kate Burleys of a team, who's been on the verge of a Silver Fern, or... you know, you can name them in any of these teams. Even Phoenix Kanaka, who's ex-Silver Fern, who's at the end of her career but still playing amazingly well, yeah. Was dynamic in the final against the Steel, and really, you know, kind of, I thought was the player of the game. Those players, I think, just look and go, well, I'll retire. There's nothing in it to me. I'm not, I'm not going to give up half my year to play and not really get paid or get expenses covered. I've had a good run. I was going to move on the next couple of years anyway. I'm out. Now, I'm not saying those two players. I'm just using those as an example. Yeah. You know. And so now you've got this point where your top players are overseas, your young players are hanging in, and your middle players are going, I'm out. Where does that leave the pathways for New Zealand netball? Where does that leave, you know, young Susie who's coming through, playing out at North Harbour today, who's actually a dynamic player? She's a 16-year-old on the verge of, say, the Mystics or the Stars. Where does she go? Where does she look for her opportunities? I tell you, the real problem, mate, is she either looks overseas or she looks at rugby league, basketball, football, or rugby. Super Rugby, a final was on today for the women. You know, there's lots of other options. And netball, they not only dropped the ball, they've dropped the boulder and it's landed squarely on their own heads.
Unbelievable. When you look at it, Lee, like, you've probably got a few players that are, which you're looking after, possibly will be looking for overseas contracts. But when you look at this, the concern for me, Lee, is, yes, we could have 14 to 20 players playing overseas. But these players, they're not in their early 20s, they're in their late 20s, 30s. Maybe some of them will retire. Soon, where is this next generation? It's not coming through.
Well, I think what's also been not publicised or broadcast is that community netball, so your netball, what they call netball centre, so Auckland Netball Centre, North Harbour Netball Centre, Waitakere, you know, yep. there'll be Manukau, I'm assuming, around the Auckland area, and then yep. throughout the rest of the country, Canterbury and the Dunedin Netball Centre and Invercargill, etc. They're actually pretty upset about this, because for exactly the same reason that you just touched on, that I mentioned in the ramble before, where did their players go? You've got to remember that there's also a lot of players that play in representative teams. So Netball South plays Netball Canterbury. That's not your pro players, that's the next level under. Yeah. They don't get played, they're amateurs, but what they are is a pathway and a feeder to elite netball. Well, if there's no elite netball, where do they go? What's their pathway? And that's what I'm saying, the sport's in wider trouble than what's just broadcast about, oh, well, look, let's just take a year off. Well, what I know about this, as a young bloke, I went to university and I was hopeless. Excellent place to drink beer, meet mates and chase girls. After the first year...
I was going to say you're still hopeless now, so yeah.
I'm hopeless at all those three things now. At the end of the first year, my father sat down and said, look, what are you doing? You actually, you know, I'd failed a few papers and I was really just doing nothing. I said, I'll tell you what, I'll take a year off. I took a year off, I never went back. And that's the same rhetoric that we're hearing now. Almost like, well, what happens if we take a year off and we just make an amateur for a year and then we build into something great? It'll never happen. It will never happen. And look, there's rumours around 2028, there's rumours about Australia, there's rumours about teams joining. The other news partner that came out this week, came on. New Zealand have said to the Stars, the Magic and the Tactics,
yeah.
We're done. We're not funding you anymore. So again, where was that conversation? They told them, look, we're on the, what is the date today, about the 24th, 25th of July? They told them that a week ago and said, by the 31st of July, we're out. Like, where's that conversation happening in January to say, look, at the end of the season, we're going to be out, giving these franchises an opportunity to look for, you know, funding from elsewhere, maybe private ownership.
Yeah.
We talked about all of these options on the show, Eamon. You know, I know that, for example, the Steel, and in particular the Mystics, have got heavy financial backing ready to come in
and
basically take them over. Okay, great. So where's that conversation at? And why was that conversation not had 12 months ago? You've now told three franchises and their staff, we're done. So unless they've got funding, they are done. You've told the players of those franchises, well, you're probably done as well. You need to look elsewhere. So all of this is just creating this massive uncertainty around what the future of the sport is. And I go back to my point at the beginning. All of this has been foreseen. It's not new. Alistair Cronin's got up at the AGM of Netball New Zealand and told them that this year, that the projected forecast loss for the ANZ Premiership was $3.7 million. Told them. Then he came out on Friday on the Mike Hosking show and said, oh, we've made a 3.7 loss, as though it's a surprise. It's not. You forecast it in February, mate. So if you're going to forecast it, you can't then use it to say, in the way that he did, was, oh, well, it's almost a surprise and shock people and go, oh, I can't believe that competition made that amount of loss. You forecast it. So what did you do between when you forecast it and now to then overcome it. Now, the rumour is obviously that they're going to dig into more reserves. Okay, sweet. But what have you been doing? Tell us what have you been doing. Tell us the positive things that you've been doing that have given us options and the players some confidence that they're on the right track, that there is a future, that there is light at the end of the tunnel here. What we've seen is darkness and cave-like conditions of the 1800s where cowboys ran amok with the Indians. That's what this is.
Unbelievable. I was just going to say this right now, like you have a look at Dame Nolene Tarua, she will be, you know, she's trying to get a team up for a Commonwealth Games, and there are a few players from the ANZ Premiership involved. That must be so uncertain for some of those players. Also, Lee, when you look at this, and I'm going to say this right now, okay, Carruthers got up and the new CEO, they've come into this, but somebody has to put their hand up and fall on their sword here. Now, they can say it's the previous board. Someone's got to take it by the throat and just say, we need to get moving. We need to get sponsorship. Because netball now, when it comes to women's sports, it lags behind rugby union, it lags behind cricket, it's lagging behind basketball, it's lagging behind football, and it's lagging behind hockey.
Well, I think, to your point, the horse is bolted on that. Jenny Wiley fell on a sword. She's out. The three or four of the previous board out. There's others to go. But the problem is that that's all fine and good. But to your point, you know, like, there's no one can stand up and say, well, that's now my fault. You've got a new board that's come in. You've got a new CEO who hasn't actually started yet. And you've got a board chair. Now, I've sat on those boards. It would be an extremely difficult board to come into right now. But what I would be saying if I was on that board is we have a massive PR problem here. Your media manager of 20 years, highly respected in Kerry Manders, highly respected amongst all media, has left.
Kerry Manders has left.
Left and has been gone for 6 months. So
very good. So very good at their job. Very
the
good.
The PR problem is massive here because... You, to your point, you're just destroying your sport, and you're getting past. What would you be doing? What would you be saying? What would the messaging that you'd be getting out there? It wouldn't be what they are doing now, which is to sort of say, well, you know. And I noticed Carruthers on TV last night. He was a bit more positive about, you know, it's a premier. We will have a competition. So someone's got in his ear between the morning interview he did and the evening interview that he did. To your point that you touched on, which was very valid here. Is that the rumours, not the rumours, out of Glasgow, a lot of players are worried about their future. You know, there is probably half that team's in the ANZ Premiership, half that team's playing overseas. The team, half the playing overseas, I'd probably pick now because the others' heads are not in the game. You know, they are. I can tell you, a lot of my players are messaging what's happening, where are we at, any news, any updates. So it's filtering through, and that's the chatter. Well, that's not going to help your preparation, is it? That's not going to sit there and go, oh, okay, this is good. What I will say on that is this, the ironic thing in this, Eamon, not now, but potentially in 12 months' time, if Nolene is still in the chair, her ability to choose a very, very strong Silk Fern side is greater. And the reason it's greater is that if her 15 leading players are particularly playing in Australia or even to a degree in England, those competitions, particularly Australia, is far, far superior. And we've seen this. And what the ANZ Premiership is. So we've seen the development of like a Kate Effernan, Grace Nowicki, Maddy Gordon. That's not even counting like Ty Selby Ricketts and Jane Watson and Jenny Cranton, who are, you know, former Silver Ferns. If you start adding into that and your starting seven or your team is really filtered throughout that, you know, super netball competition, the Australians are doing us a massive favour because the quality of that netball and the week in, week out, a toughness that those players will have to endure is far greater than what they would get here. Now that's the success part of it, but that is not what you want to do. You don't want to hang your hat and say, "Well, we need our players to go into an Australian competition because that will make our Silver Ferns stronger." If that's your strategy, then get out of the chair. But it will be a byproduct. They will be better now. Whether they're better this time around because the distraction is so much, I couldn't comment. But what I do know is that it's been a massive distraction. Your point is valid around the build-up to the Commonwealth Games. Players are going to have to really get their head in the game, and Nolan's going to have to do an extraordinary job to get some of her leading players into the game here, because Netball New Zealand have just basically gone out into a paddock, got a cow, put the organisation under it, and pooed on it.
Well, that's probably a good way of saying it. Lee, thank you so much for your time. No doubt I'll probably catch up with you in the next few days.
Look forward to that.
Cheers, bye.
And that was a change from our normal, that what was scheduled. So we'll catch up with Christina Sue after we've spoken with Joey Green, so which will be up next.
Four seasons in one day, lying in the depths of your imagination, worlds above and worlds below. Sun shines on the black clouds hanging over the domain. Even when you're feeling warm, the temperature could drop away. Like four seasons in one day, smiling as the shit comes down. You can tell a man from what he has to say. Everything gets turned around, and I will risk my neck again, again. You can take me where you will, up the creek and through the mill. Like all the things you can't explain, seasons in one day.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Well, it is definitely four seasons in one day in Auckland at the moment. So this our NRL and Auckland Rugby League segment is brought to you by WaterSmart. Weekend mission sorted, mate. Wash the car, rinse the boat, clean the bait station, keep the wife's tomato plants happy, all with a WaterSmart tank. No water restrictions, no worries, and different sizes to suit your property. Check out watersmart.co.nz and take control today. Well, joining us as he does most Saturdays, the Green Machine himself, Joey Green. Good morning to you, mate.
Morning, mate. Look, I tell you what, it's got to be one of the mornings where I'm probably a bit more excited about local footy than the Warriors game tonight. There's a lot riding on the last round.
Oh, mate, is there what?
But look, let's talk about the Warriors first.
Yeah, well, of course, Warriors, you know, they've done enough to beat the Dragons. Pretty much they're close to very much their top lineup against the Bulldog sides, who have been indifferent this year, but will be confident going into this game. I think this is a must win for the Warriors, as we saw what the as we'll come to a bit later, what the Roosters were able to do to the Knights. I just think this one becomes so crucial, Joey.
Yeah, 100%, especially with the Bulldogs still being in finals contention as well. Every game pretty much in their run home is starting to look like must win, especially if they want to hold the Roosters outside of our top two, as we'll touch on later. But yeah, last week at that Dragons Middles really took it to the likes of the Mitch Barnett, the James Fisher Harris's. If you look at the Couchman twins, the Hamish Stewart, the Dylan Egan, I think we've touched on that same side for the last few weeks. They're going to be a team to watch for 2027 and beyond. But yep, the Warriors taking on the Bulldogs tonight. I think when we look at how the Bulldogs are going, they look very composed last week with Sean O'Sullivan running it. So I'd say what you want about who's wearing what jersey, but Sean O'Sullivan's clearly the more smarter footballer compared to Lachlan Galvin. And I think heading into the back end of the season, it's going to be guys like him for Canterbury Bankstown who might help their chances of making the eight. Yep, they've got superstars of Matt Burden, Stephen Crichton, Jacob Carriers out on that right hand edge. But, you know, it's going to be crucial to help out the young guys like the Lachlan Galvins, the Bailey Haywards, who aren't, you know, traditional halfbacks or hookers, but are starting to learn these roles very well. Cameron Giraldo's got a very good system, but Andrew Webb has got a 10 times better system going at the moment. The bench is firing with Tanistow, with Smith, Dimitri Waimonga, Leka Halathima as well. That's a very impactful bench. They're bringing lots of energy in their 25-30 minutes since. So I think it's going to be that middle period of the game, that 25 to 55 minutes where if the Warriors can really dominate that period, then they should be walking out of Sydney with the 2 points tonight.
Absolutely, I think it'll be a crucial one. Anyway, we might as well get to the Thursday night game. Well, the Battle of the West was Panthers 24, Eels 18. Tom Jenkins breaks a record in a season for the Panthers, but then Nathan Cleary and the talk this week about him going to the Warriors, it's all ended up, he's more or less publicly said he's not going to the Warriors in 2028 because he doesn't want to stop his brother Jet Cleary's progress there.
Yeah, look, I think if Nathan Cleary is going to go anywhere, to be fair, I'd highly doubt that it's going to be the Warriors, and it's great that he's come out and confirmed that because it looked like a very unlikely move from the get-go anyway, but they're very lucky to walk away from Combank Stadium on Thursday night with the 2 points in hand. It's all Parramatta. It's always kind of one of those games, the Battle of the West, that they really get up for, and they always make life a little bit harder for Penrith in these matchups. That left edge of Penrith is starting to have a few more concerns now, that Blaise Alangi, Isaiah Papali'i, Casey McLean and Tom Jenkins as well. Attacking-wise, you know how good that edge can be. Obviously, with Tom Jenkins and his try-scoring ability, Casey McLean and his X-factor. But defensively, they're going to have to shore up that edge. If they're going to be able to want to go deep into September and October again, we know they've got it. Like we said, we know they've got the points with ball in hand, but defensively, they've got to be able to turn that around. And heading into the last 6 weeks, if they can tidy that up, then you know they're looking like the front runners for that premiership in October.
Absolutely. Then we go to the Friday night game. Roosters 23, Knights 22. Big concern for the Knights are Dylan Brown. Knee injury doesn't look good, and I suppose it's not only the Knights but the Kiwi coach Stacey Jones will be sweating on that. But I looked at that performance, Tedesco a hat-trick, brilliant, but then I looked at the Knights, Phoenix Crossland, I think he definitely is wanting to have that number 9 in the Kiwis jersey as a permanent.
Yeah, 100%, and I think for someone like Phoenix Crossland, if he's not going to be the starting hooker for Stacey Jones come the World Cup, then you've got to at least have him in the starting 17 somewhere. Started at hooker last night, once Dylan Brown went down, ended up playing halfback, and you know, considering everything that happened to Newcastle's side last night, you lose your star halfback, you lose your star back rower as well. Considering they only went down by 1 point to a very star-studded Roosters side who are running hot at the moment, the Newcastle boys done well. Brandon Best, he just knows how to turn up in a big moment. You know, nearly managed to sneak the game into extra time for the Knights play full, but then you know, some legend named Ali Kerr-Evans comes along and just manages to clinch the game for the Roosters. But like we said at the top of the show, the Roosters sitting in second place now, and if the Warriors don't get that one tonight, then they might hold on to that second spot. And you know, whether the Warriors can, you know, leapfrog them later in the season remains to be seen. But the Roosters, we mentioned them a few weeks ago, a bit of a dark horse in this competition and starting to find form at the right time of the season.
And then we go the other one. We've had a cracking game so far this weekend. Rabbitohs 28, Storm 26. Obviously, concerns for the Storm. Looked like Cam Munster went off, but the Rabbitohs, Cody Walker, I think he's playing the best football of his career. And Brandon Smith, wow, he's saying to Stacey Jones, don't forget about me.
Yeah, exactly right. If Phoenix Crossland's not going to be the starting nine for the Kiwis come October and November, then you look at someone like Brandon Smith, who's looking in great shape. He's off the alcohol for the year, and he's playing some really good football. Ashton Ward and Cody Walker in the halves are combining really well to, you know, produce results like these for the Bunnies, who are sitting, you know, inside their top eight now, and like a few other sides, are starting to find some form at the right part of the season. Another player as well who's really doing a great job for them is Matt Duffy. You know, it only came to the club on a New South Wales Cup deal when Joe Gray got injured through the middle of the season. Had a really good vein of form, went back to New South Wales Cup, plucked away, has found himself back in that fullback spot last night. and just casually runs for 300 metres. You know, it's guys like that who are going to be able to help you stay in that top eight. And I think the concerns around Harry Grant, you know, if his season is done, then you could basically say that the Melbourne Storm season is done. But credit to South for turning their season around despite all the injuries.
Absolutely. We go to Saturday. These are the games for the weekend. Raiders versus Tigers and a bit of a Queensland derby. Cowboys versus Broncos. Well, the first one, Raiders versus Tigers. Tigers, hey, on the field, they're not looking too good. Off the field, they're even worse. The Raiders, they've come into a little bit of vein of form, and as you know, they're trying to make a run to get into this eight.
Yeah, and it doesn't exactly help the Raiders' case that they've lost someone like Hudson Young for the remainder of the season and probably for a fair chunk of 2027 as well. But like you said, the Tigers, they just can't seem to keep themselves away from the off-field drama. First, Jerome Luai causing a bit of distraction and leaving to PNG, albeit with a stop at Parramatta. Adam Dewey not wanting to play a different role for the West Tigers. Have your opinions about that as you do, but I'm really excited to see Javon Andrews despite the circumstances around it. Queensland under-19 player of the match last year in the under-19 State of Origin has been combining really well with Fluffy Finu in reserve grade as well. I would have loved to have seen that combination in first grade this week, but you know, he's not a traditional halfback, so it's going to be interesting to see how him and Jerome Luai combined this afternoon, and I think it's going to go either of two ways. I think the Tigers are either going to come out with a really massive performance and silence a lot of the critics, or similar to a few weeks ago, they're going to get dominated by Canberra at home, and there's probably going to be a whole lot more pressure piled on the club.
Absolutely. And then Cowboys versus Broncos. Well, this one's an interesting one because the Broncos have come into a bit of form.
Yeah, and at the right part of the season too. You know, 6 weeks left. We saw the magical run they had in 2025 to storm home and take the premiership. The Cowboys, without Tommy Dearden tonight, so we see Jackson Trudy move back into the halves alongside Jake Clifford, who, in my opinion, should have stayed there last week alongside Tommy Dearden. But now that we can see that combination coming into fray, I think without Dearden, they might still be able to get the job done as they've played a fair chunk of the season, but we know how talented the Broncos side is, what they are able to produce. I think the Broncos are just going to be able to go up to Townsville and take the 2 points home back to Brisbane.
And then we go to Sunday, Dragons versus Titans, Seagulls versus Sharks.
Look, I think the Dragons playing the Titans down in Cobgrate, yes, it's the Battle of the Spoon, but I think the Dragons are going to, I don't know whether you call it an upset or not, but I think they're going to find their third victory of the season tomorrow afternoon. They really took it to the Warriors last week, and we've seen improvements from both of these sides, to be fair, but I think the Dragons will just go that extra mile and get the 2 points at home. Manly and Cronulla, their football momentum is slowly starting to fade away now. They're back outside the top eight. And if they want to have any chance of playing finals football come September, it's going to be a massive game like this against Cronulla, who have won four of their last five. The only game they've lost in the last 6 weeks is against the red-hot Roosters side. Manly love playing Sunday afternoon at Brookvale, but you know, a very good Cronulla side. It's going to be a great game to watch to end the round, but I think Cronulla might just be too strong.
Okay, we go to Auckland Rugby League, Fox Memorial, the penultimate round. So these are the games, to Manukau versus Bay Roskill, Mount Albert versus Marist Saints, Otahuhu versus Papakura, Point Chev versus Ponsonby. A lot of games on the line, so let's go through them now, Joey.
Yeah, like we said at the top of the show, a lot can happen this afternoon. The only two sides that are basically locked into playing final football next week Otahu and Manukau. And then we take a look at the rest of the matchups. Obviously, Bay Roskill, they're going to need a win this afternoon over Manukau. Playing at Moyle Park, though, was going to be hard to tip the Magpies up here. But then Mount Albert taking on Marist. Marist are all but confirmed to go down to the Sharman Cup next year. So Mount Albert just need to win this afternoon, and they've secured their final spot. Otahuhu taking on Papakura. Otahuhu had sewn up the Rukutai Shield as the minor premiers about a month ago, so they're pretty comfortable in their first spot. Taking on Papakura, who needs to win, and they're also going to need the Poinchef Pirates to lose, who are taking on Ponsonby, and Ponsonby basically need everybody else to lose, and they need to beat Papakura as well, so... look, that's going to be a very massive weekend of local football to watch, regardless of whether you go to, whether it's Moyle Park, even Fouts Park to a T2. Marist might be able to upset Mount Albert and disrupt their chances, but around that 4 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. this afternoon, there's going to be a lot of chaos in the Fox Memorial, and I can't wait to not only see the games on Bar TV, but be able to talk about it come next week when we're talking about a top four in the Fox Memorial.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, then the Steel Shanks Women's Premiership, Manukau versus Mangerewa, Otahuhu versus Mangaree East, Richmond versus Mount Albert.
Yeah, look, I'm kind of gutted that the Steel Shanks ladder isn't as exciting as the Fox Memorial at the moment. There's a top-of-the-table clash and Mangaree taking on Otahuhu. Mangaree basically will just want to try and sneak an upset over Otahuhu, who are basically sewn up for the minor premiership like their men's side. Richmond and Manurewa are also currently sitting in third and fourth, but Richmond will need a beat Mount Albert quite comfortably if they want to leapfrog Manurewa into their third spot and get a home semi next week. But like we said, lots to play for in local football over this weekend, and come next weekend, there's going to be some very interesting conversations about who's playing where and the teams that we might see, not only in the Steel Shanks, the Fox Memorial, the Sharman Cup. Lots of local football coming up over the next 3 weeks, and I'm very excited to see how it pans out.
And thank you so much for bringing that to us, Joey. I'll try and give you a call during the week, and we will catch up as we do on Saturday, next Saturday, mate.
Always a pleasure, mate. Can't wait to see how the Fox Memorial plays out. And we have some very interesting conversations through the week and heading into next Saturday again. But always a pleasure, mate.
Well, my money's on Otahuhu to win the whole lot, but that's all I'm saying. On that note, catch you later, mate. Bye. Okay, that was Joey Green, and next up we're going to get to an interview with Christina Sue on the Super Rugby Picky Final.
In my talk, time and again, time and again. No fire where I lit my spark. I am not afraid of the dark. Will your words devour my heart and put me to shame? Put me to shame. Travel so far, old enough to know who you are, wise enough to carry the scars without any blame. There's no one to blame. It's easy to forget what you learned, waiting for the thrill to return, feeling your desire burn and drawn to the flame. Whenever I am by your side, dust from a distant sun will shower over.
welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Just before we get to our next guest, former Black fan, Christina Sue. This segment is brought to you by Enterprise Recruitment. Finding the right people can be hard and there's so many unexpected surprises. Well, cut out those unexpected surprises by contacting Enterprise Recruitment, where they will find you the right candidate to suit your business needs. So contact enterprise.co.nz and they have branches nationwide. Wow. Big final in Christchurch at One New Zealand Stadium, Te Kaha, and they're expecting a sellout there, which is brilliant for the women's game. For Super Rugby Aupiki, it is Matatu versus the Blues women's team, and here to join us is former Black Fern and part of that 2017 World Cup winning team, Christina Sue. Good morning, Christina, and how are you?
Morena, I'm really good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, excellent, excellent, excellent. But really looking forward to this big final. And it's going to be great, and, you know, to have it at probably what people are now calling the Premier Stadium in New Zealand and a packed house, very, very likely in Christchurch, because sometimes Christchurch have a wee problem with Auckland, as we all know. But the season in general, I think it's been a fantastic competition. We've seen the Hurricanes Poa really much improved, probably the addition of Renee Holmes, but we come to this final, the two best teams in the competition, the Blues women's team. Wow, what a team when you've got someone like Braxton Sorensen McGee at the back, DeMont leading the cutter, a loose forward trio, a fantastic, and Amarante Satiti, who has really impressed me this year. And then we look at Matatu with Duplessis and Booker in the midfield, Maya Jones and halfback, Olsen Baker, and then they've got a superb front row where they have the luxury of bringing a player on like Georgina Ponsonby off the bench. It's going to be a great final, Christina.
Oh, you named it. You said it. You caught it around the talent that's across both sides. Black Ferns galore. I think it'd be fair to say that Blues had a bit of a shaky start to the season, but they're a quality team. They're reigning champs.
Oh, yeah.
For their third title, so they know how to play finals footy. And then yet there's the Matatu group that are just high on their performance and consistency. They knew they were in the final even before going into the, into that round six. And they've got the home support, like you said, the Premier Stadium of New Zealand.
It is, and when you look at it, like the development of especially the domestic women's game, you know, they started it off at One New Zealand, Te Kaha, and they were able to get over 20,000 to that first Super Rugby Aupiki game between Matatu and Chiefs Manawa. And, you know, a few years ago, and this is how much things have changed, people would say Matatu or Matahu. Now what they've done there at Matatu is they've really built a great structure there. They've got some great players there, obviously some good coaches there, and I suppose it's good when you've got an assistant called Whitney Hansen helping you out.
Yeah, well, Whitney was part of the original coaching framework along with Blair Baxter.
Oh, Blair Baxter's a good coach.
Yeah, Blair Baxter, but Whitney Hansen, we know, has progressed to being the Black Ferns coach, so they've really invested in that franchise, and they're the standalone franchise. They're not going off the back of a men's already established club like the Chiefs or Hurricanes or, you know, Highlanders. They've said that they'll go from scratch, and I want to pay credit to the general manager named Sarah Munro. She's the real driving force behind that and got on some really good sponsors who have invested in their brand and what their vision is and how they're, you know, what they've created, and it's pretty special. I think they're leading in so many other ways that other franchises can learn from, and I've done it from scratch. So huge credit to Sarah Munro and their team for the efforts that they put into Matatu franchise.
Absolutely. And when you actually look at it, like, it's just that development of that area, because for so long, and we can be honest here that women's rugby was dominated very much north of Taupo. It was the Waikatos, it was the Counties Manukau, it was the Aucklands. Occasionally you get the Wellingtons, obviously Manawatu where you're from, but for places like Canterbury and Otago, Canterbury have always built has always been there or thereabouts women's rugby, but we've seen Otago really developing the women's game.
I think, Canterbury have always been strong. They've produced some exceptional black ferns over the years down there, but it has been kind of just centralised in that area. You see the Otago Spirit, they're building nicely, and lots of their players actually went up to the Hurricane Tapoa, and we're really solid for them this year. So, and you've got Sini Naupu, who's the CEO of Otago.
Absolutely fantastic person.
So it should be driving lots of changes down there. But I guess the growth of the game has just accelerated. But that goes back to the professionalism too. It's the first year in the 5 years running of Opiki that they've actually been able to centralise. They've got more time on grass. They've got semi-professional contracts. And you can see in the skill level, like the brand of rugby that they're playing, is entertaining. They probably have the ball in play a lot longer than a men's game. And you're getting a new viewership and new fans attracted to it. And like any female sports, it's hugely inspiring and motivating to see where it's landed.
Absolutely. And you've hit the nail on the head there, Christina, because the simple reason is people are enjoying, you know, one thing I did enjoy, I really enjoyed the Women's World Cup last year. And the simple reason was it was good rugby. It flowed quicker. We didn't have 20 minutes for a scrum, 10 minutes for somebody claiming to be hurt. It was actually good. One of the things I'd just like to ask you is that we hear so many things on the men's game about, you know, with our Super Rugby and European teams, you know, a world club championship. But really, for Super Rugby Opiki, and obviously Australia, whether they will come into, whether we have a Super Rugby Pacific in women's rugby soon, really for some of these picky clubs like the Blues, like the Matatus, like some of the Manas and the Powers, wouldn't it be good if they could play against some of the best in Europe?
Oh, yeah, but that'll obviously come with investment and small stepping stones. That whoever wins today will go on to play the winner of the Super W final. So that's next Saturday, I believe, in Sydney. And that's going to be out of the Fijiana Drua woman and the Waratahs. I see that they're in a final in a couple of hours' time. So they're gunning to get one of those two teams, and they'll face either the Blues or the Matatu. So it's exciting. But yeah, you're right. If they can have some sort of a franchise super provincial competition where they can go over to play the best in the Northern Hemisphere, it will be hugely powerful. But I think for us, it's just getting those extra fixtures at even an international level with black fans. They've made
absolutely
improvements. They're playing South Africa and stuff now. So, getting there, and that'll be obviously the next steps is how do you open it up to that next level that you mentioned around the Premiership, maybe the winner of that, the England Premiership. Premier One plays a big part of this Super W and Opiki finals.
Yeah. I think it would just be brilliant for the game, and it also would give us some, obviously when we look at it, give us that competition, like where we are basically, Australia's our closest opponent, and there is a gap between us and Australia, quite a huge gap, and probably the other nearest one would be South Africa, who's getting better, and Canada, but really, I think for our Black Ferns, we need more regular competition with the Northern Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you're right.
And now, I don't get told that very often, so thank you so much. Hey, Christina, really enjoyed this chat, and it's been awesome. And who are you picking for it? Who are you picking?
Blues have won it two times. It'd be nice to see Matatu win it again, given their form of the season. And I'm just going to say that because I'm taking my first 15 girls, Manukata, down there next Tuesday for a Matatu tour.
Awesome.
Engage with them. And to play Christchurch Girls in a first-15 fixture, so we'll just
Rush
into the cake if it's during a week where they're preparing for another game rather than having their reviews and end-of-season tours. But you know what, at the end of the day, it's about who performs best, and finals footy is just a whole different kettle of fish. So I wish both the sides all the best, and I hope it's a really, and I know it will be, a highly entertaining game, and pretty cool for the fans down there and the new fans that'll be watching at 4:30 today. I'm hoping they actually must too get up this time. Like I said, it's because I'll be biased and wanting them for my school team to be on a high next week. And former three former Manukata students, our captains are all playing for Matatu, Clive Wilson Baker, Maya Davis, awesome. And Plum King. So those three, yep, we've got a bit of a tie there.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, you have a brilliant day. Enjoy the final. And I hope we can catch up soon.
Yeah, all right, mate. No worries. You take care.
Cheers. Thanks a lot. That was Christina Sue, former Black Fern. Now, that was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant to have that chat. Anyway, well, next up, we've got Seamus Martinez. We talk a bit of football.
Couldn't find a language. When I needed you more, I couldn't say a word. My hands truly tied. Yeah, I know I'm a prisoner. When my tongue wouldn't move, you had it tied with your heartstrings again.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend, and I have to say right now it has been a good show so far. Anyway, Lee, if you're looking to buy, looking to sell, I have two of the best people who will help you out in making your and selling your family home or looking to get your first house on this big Auckland property market. Their name is Robert Thompson, and the better half, of course, is Deborah Thompson. Now, they both have fantastic business acumen. Both will get you the results you're looking for. Both will give you the right advice. They keep in touch. Any changes to any district plans, etc., they go and investigate that for you. They are superb people. So Robert's number is 021-737-949, or you can email them r.thompson@barfords.co.nz, or Deborah, you can give her a call, 021-673-600, d.thompson@barfords.co.nz. So hope everything's all going well for you, Robert, mate. Anyway, here to join us, the big guy himself, Seamus Martin, good morning to you, young man.
Morning, Eamon. How are you going?
Good, 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 good. I was just going to say to you, well, we head into it. It's obviously Monday was a bit of a different day in New Zealand. Obviously, the World Cup got overshadowed by something that was happening at Royal Birkenhead. But Spain won, Argentina nil. Spain, for the first few rounds, first few games, really flew under the radar. A lot of people felt they weren't playing well. Well, they let one go in the whole tournament. They thoroughly deserved to win this World Cup.
Yeah, they do. They say defence wins titles, doesn't it? And it was certainly the case for Spain. Six out of seven matches, a clean sheet. As you rightly point out, just one goal conceded. I thought the final was unfortunately one of those games, one of those you know, high pressure matches where you want the two teams to come out and really throw the kitchen sink. But Argentina, like France, were in the semi-final. They were just erased by Spain. Far too clinical, Spain. Great possession game. Strangled them out of the match. And, you know, it was unfortunate. It was only a 1-0 victory. Great goal, Ferran Torres. Really well taken in extra time. But the class of the Spaniards shone. And the further away we've got from this, the more disappointed I've been, actually, in Argentina and their antics after the final whistle. I tried to look at the best of them through the tournament. I know they're a combative side. I know they're a confrontational side. I know they're an aggressive side. But I really wanted the Messi fairy tale to continue. But there was a moment in the match, Eamon, where Messi turned to the referee and almost tried to get the Spanish left-back, whose name escapes me right now, sent off for talking behind his hand. And I just thought at that moment, it really lost everything for me.
Yeah, it did.
It took the gloss off the Argentinian and the Messi performance in that World Cup. So, and even after, you know, afterwards, you had Donald Trump trying to stand on stage. You had the Argentinians turning their back at the trophy lift. It just left a really sour taste in my mouth at the end of what was, you know, a fantastic 5 weeks of football in North America. Spain, I think, really deserving winners. Great to see the world number one and world number two come up against each other. It's what you want in the World Cup final. But yeah, it was just a funny old day. Like you say, you know, Ryan Fox's win in the morning, and then a final that maybe didn't live up to expectations with a little bit of ugliness after the final whistle. It was just not the way you wanted that global showpiece to end. However, very, very deserving winners, Spain. They were superb through the tournament and rightly winning their second ever World Cup.
And well deserved, I must admit, God. Yeah, it not only was the half-time show terrible, then afterwards the two, and I've got to be careful what I say here, you had Mr. Trump and Mr. Infantino. It was like, God, here we go again. But we won't go any further. Let's talk positive stuff. Auckland FC versus Spurs. Wow. A couple of new signings for Auckland FC. Aaron Carver and Aaron Cartwright.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how Aaron Carver is going to go. It looks like he'll slot into the role that Dan Hall had. He's an experienced defender. He's won, you know, I think it's two premierships and one championship in his career. He's coming over from Korea. So, yeah, that sort of headlines the signings together with Lockie Bayliss, the young New Zealand international who's coming across from Newcastle. But, yeah, a lot of raps on Cartwright. Coming out of Melbourne City Academy, he switched allegiances from Australia to New Zealand, represented New Zealand at the Under-17 World Cup. So he's got big raps on him. And great to see also a few of the Pro League, the OFC Pro League players getting promoted through, like Issa Prince, Daniel Norman, Bailey Ferguson, amongst some of those. So it'll be, I think it will be this classic exhibition match. Tottenham have named 35 players to come down under for their tour to New Zealand and Australia. So expect to see a lot of changes for both sides. I think Auckland FC will probably play two brand new 11s, 45 minutes each, with maybe a couple of players getting 60 or 70 minutes or so, and expect to see lots of changes for Tottenham. I think they only arrive in New Zealand later, or have maybe touched down this morning.
Yeah, they have.
And then they're playing tomorrow late afternoon. So, you know, there might be a bit of a jet lag on there. They've had a warm-up game against MK Dons earlier this week at their training facility there. But I'm really interested to see Auckland FC, to see how they turn out. The crowd, by all accounts, is going to be absolutely jam-packed into Eden Park. Let's hope the weather plays ball, because it's horrendous down here today.
Oh, mate, it's been terrible. It feels like winter, finally. We were going on, it doesn't feel like winter, but God, this morning, it was freezing.
It was, and look, a couple of Auckland FC players not in the squad. They've been granted extended leave after the World Cup, being Callan Elliott and Nando Pienaar. Tottenham also, they won't be without their World Cup stars that made it to the Final Four, but expect to see Andy Robertson, John Paul Van Henker, Mickey Van Der Ven, Dominic Solanke. So there is still some real English Premier League pull to this Tottenham side, and it should be a great spectacle there at Eden Park.
I will say this right now, and anyone that is having a bet, it's R18, bet responsible. I'd put some money on a guy called Mason Mallor, a young Irish striker, to score a goal tomorrow.
I've been doing my research. I'm actually lucky enough to be doing the commentary for TVNZ, so I've been deep in the world of Tottenham Hotspur, and yes, I do know that he has recently represented the Republic of Ireland as well, so yeah, expect to see big things from him too.
Absolutely. Then we look at this Auckland FC Women's 11. Abby Ursep's come in, Mackenzie Barry from the Phoenix has come in. Well, I have to say they're putting a decent team together for this game against Chelsea.
Yeah, it's a signal of intent, isn't it, from Auckland FC that their A-League women's side won't come into the competition until next year at the earliest. But there has been talk around the football circles that there's a number of football firms, or former football firms in the case of Abby Ursig, that are just waiting for this team to be stood up, and then they'd love to come down and pass on their knowledge that they've gained over the years. But yeah, fantastic to see a mix of experienced football ferns, internationals like Abby Ursig, like Liv Chance, as well as some players that have been in the A-League women for a few years but probably haven't really established themselves. Charlotte Lancaster at Newcastle is one who had her first season last year. She's going to be pulling on the black and blue of Auckland FC. Maggie Jenkins is a top young striker as well. Expect to see a lot more names come through, probably some also from the Women's Premier League here in New Zealand, from that Auckland United side. They've been pretty active in the transfer market and looking to get a few players through. So look, I'm really interested to see how that team shapes up, and I'm hoping against Chelsea, who are a top international women's side, that we get just as good a crowd, or just as good as a support as the match tomorrow.
Absolutely. Sam, we also talk women's football. Kate Shepherd Cup quarterfinal catch-up game. Eastern Suburbs versus Auckland United. Auckland United fresh off their AFC Club Championship win. Well, I have to say, you'd have to give it to Auckland United at this stage, but Eastern Suburbs, they're not that far off some of these teams.
Well, Eastern Suburbs actually leading the Women's Premier League, and these two teams met midweek, and it was a 2-1 win for Eastern Suburbs over Auckland United at Keith Hay Park. First time in about 2.5 years, I think, Auckland United have been defeated at home. So you'd have to say, on current form, Eastern Suburbs would start as the favourites in that quarterfinal. A reminder, that is the last of the four quarterfinals. The others played earlier, which were Kashmir Tech beating Dunedin City Royals, Ellerslie beating Western Springs, and Wellington Phoenix beating Waterside Karori. I think this one could all go all the way through to penalties, Eamon. These two teams are really evenly matched in the league, and I wonder whether that midweek win to Eastern Suburbs and home advantage has them starting as slight favourites. But like you, I am going to tip Auckland United, the powerhouse of women's football in New Zealand. Three OFC Women's Champions League titles. They've been untouchable in domestic competition. So I am going to tip the away side, Auckland United, to beat Eastern Suburbs in the Kate Shepherd Cup quarterfinal.
Absolutely. Then we go to the Deliver Easy Chatham Cup. And, of course, this is a game for today. Fencibles versus Auckland City FC. Then on Sunday, it's Kashmir Tech versus Miramar Rangers, Hibiscus Coast versus the Napier City Rovers, and Nelson Suburbs versus Auckland United.
Well, starting with that clash today, All Northern League between Fencibles United and Auckland City. Auckland City also midweek chipped up against East Coast Bays at Bay City Park, so they're coming off a loss against Fencibles on the turf. I'm going to tip an upset here. I'm going to say Fencibles United, who are having a good cup run, upset the apple cart and tip Auckland City out of the Chatham Cup. I won't be allowed back at Kiwi Tier Street after that call, but there's something about this Fencibles side. They're fourth in the league at the moment, and they're going good guns, and I think a good cup run for them might see them through. Looking ahead to tomorrow, look, these are pretty storied clubs in Chatham Cup history, aren't they? Kashmir Tech against Miramar Rangers. I go with Miramar Rangers in that one. I think the Southern League is not as strong as we've seen in previous years, despite the arrival of South Island United in the OFC Pro League. So I think Miramar Rangers from Wellington win that one. Hibiscus Coast versus Napier City. Well, Hibiscus Coast, the cup upstarts, they tipped my club Melville out in the last round. Therefore, cup rules dictates that I have to support Hibiscus Coast. So I'm going to tip another massive upset to tip the Coasters to beat Napier City Rovers, who are flying at the moment and have Chatham Cup pedigree behind them. And in the final match, Nelson Suburbs versus Auckland United, I'm going to tip Nelson Suburbs to win that one at home. So I've gone basically a bunch of underdogs there. I've gone Fencibles to beat Auckland City. I've gone the away team Miramar to beat Kashmir Tech, Hibiscus Coast to beat Napier City, and Nelson Suburbs to beat Auckland United. I'm not sure the TAB will be paying very good odds on those tips of mine, but there you go. I'll put my neck on the line.
Let's have a think about it. In 6 weeks' time, we will be talking a certain thing for the EPL. Now we're hoping for a bit better form than we did last season. But as I just said, we will hex some team to relegation. So hopefully it's not Nottingham Forest. Hey, just quickly, just before I go, Elijah Justice, Swansea, a very, very good move for him.
Yeah, superb move. He scored as well against Udinese in a pre-season game overnight. Look, he's having the summer of his life at the moment. Absolutely on fire. I couldn't wish it on a nicer bloke. I'm a big, big fan of Elijah Just. So, yeah, excellent to see him join Marco Stamenich at Swansea City. He'll be plying his trade in the Championship, and looks like he's already hit the ground running in terms of slotting right in with the Swansea side on tour. But great also to see Libby Kikachi, training again, also in the Championship too. So, expecting big things from Tyler Bindon, who's still training with the Nottingham Forest first team in pre-season, and good to see Chris Wood as well.
Absolutely. Well, we'll leave you to it. As I said about Swansea, I won't mention what Dylan Thomas said about Swansea. You probably haven't heard that, have you?
Best leave that out, and I'll go and keep dry somewhere down here.
Damn, I'll tell you off here. Okay, we'll leave you. Catch you later, Seamus. Cheers, mate.
All right, mate. Bye-bye.
That was Seamus Martin from Between Two Bears. Next up, we have Philip Tatarangi as we speak about the fantastic win by Ryan Fox in the Open. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend here on Planet FM, and wow, I have to say Monday morning became a different Monday. I woke up at about 4:30 and I thought, damn it, I've just got to watch Foxy, and I was a bit scared because I was thinking, God, please, can we see a New Zealander winning the Open champ Open Championship. Well, he did. He did it with a fantastic birdie at the end. Well, here to join us on air, he's a former winner on the PGA. He was also part of that fantastic 1992 Eisenhower Cup winning team, which included himself, Michael Campbell, who went on to win the US Open in 2005, Grant Moorhead, and Stephen Scarhill. So here to join us is Philip Tatarangi. Good morning, Philip.
How are you doing?
Yeah, good, mate. Good, good, good. I was very, very happy on Monday, and I think a lot of people, it didn't matter if you were a golf player or not, this achievement was fantastic. When we look at those final 36 holes, Philip, you know, in round two, he was just one above the cut, and then that brilliant round of 62 in the third round.
Yes. Certainly turned it on the second half of the tournament, didn't he? But I guess this is the nature of major championship golf these days, is that, you know, the field's pretty condensed, and, you know, you the old adage, you got to be in it to win it. And so being around for the weekend meant that he had a chance to make a bit of a move. It's a little bit, you know, golf geeky sort of stuff, Eamon, but usually when you have major championships, when the conditions are firm and fast, the officials put a lot of water on the greens on Friday night, and then they tend to starve them out come Sunday afternoon. And so if you have an early tee time on the Saturday morning, like you did, because just making it through the cut after a nice round on Friday, I guess the scene was set, really, for a low round out there on Saturday morning at Royal Birkdale, and that doesn't make it any easier to do it necessarily. You've still got to put the ball in the hole, but he positioned himself with, you know, a history-making, record-tying low round in the major championship with 62 on Saturday, and he was kind of right in the hunt, really, going into the last round, playing in that last group.
Absolutely, and of course then we come down to that final 68 and a birdie just to win it. What a fantastic birdie right up the 18th on that, but that just became that magical moment. And, you know, you look at the way Ryan plays. Ryan is pretty much, you know, you look at people's styles and the way they play. Ryan is very much, he's pretty straightforward. He's just one of these guys that is just is a power hitter as well too.
Yeah, he's a bit like a point guard in basketball, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
You know, you got to instinctively see your shot and take your shot when it presents itself. And although his build is a little bit different than a slight nimble point guard, he's he's you know, strong, right? And his asset is his main asset is his length and his strength, and, you know, being able to overpower and bully golf holes that might give a slightly more timid or a player that doesn't quite have the same strength and belief in their driver, you know, he's able to take advantage of that. And so he did that a few times on the back nine. But, you know, a lot's been spoken about of the birdie on the 18th hole, and maybe we'll come back to that. But for me, the birdie he made on 13 was key. It was critical. A lot of players were taking iron off of that tee. It's a long par, 400-500 yards or so, and they were avoiding the trouble. Foxy stood up on that tee and said, you know what, I'm going to take the trouble on, and now's the time to make a bit of a move. And hit a driver down there, wedged it on from just over 100 metres and made birdie, and was talking to the walking commentator at the time saying, oh, geez, the commentator's giving me a bit of a stick off with taking that aggressive play off the tee. And so he was aware that, you know, that was a play that not many players would have taken in that situation, but he chose to do it. Makes a couple of birdies, gets a couple of rough breaks, and those breaks that he got on 15 and 17 are the things that happen to the people that usually come up one or two short. The ones that come up just not quite because they get a bad break and they would have won otherwise. Well, that actually happened to the guy that ended up would go on and win it. And so when it came to the 18th hole, it absorbed a little bit of adversity with some bad breaks and bad luck, but he'd also continued to play positively and got to that 18th tee and said, you know what, I'm here to win it. I'm going to try and hit the shots to win coming down the last hole as opposed to trying not to lose.
Absolutely, and of course, when you look at it, like, obviously, you know, I've seen many interviews with Ryan, and you would understand this, being on tours like the PGA, like in Europe. You know, you do have your struggles, and I know at times he came very, in a second year of being a professional, came very, very close to actually throwing it all in, but just kept at it. You know, the struggles of being a Kiwi on these tours, it does take it out of you. At times, you know, in your career, when you were playing professionally in the US, did at times, yeah, from you, did you ever think, is this worth this anymore, or?
I think it's buried in there, and I certainly get the sentiment of what you're,
yeah,
the point you're trying to make, and that, you know, to make a career, you got to travel offshore, you don't have the comfort of sleeping in your own bed, and being around your family and friends. Mm. You've kind of got to go out and, you know, you've got to go and forge a new life somewhere else. And, you know, I think there's something in that, but I think there's a steel that comes from being forced to, you know, create a life offshore. And then when you get to, you know, the environment of a major championship. Sorry, we've got a helicopter in the background just walking the dog at the moment.
That's all good, Philip.
There was a lot of support inside the ropes, and, you know, you hear that. But at the end of the day, it's part and parcel with being a professional athlete that, you know, when you get inside the ropes, when you walk over the white line, it's you and either you and your teammates, or in golf's instance, it's you and your caddy that have got to make some pretty tough calls. And whether you're playing at Royal Birkdale, or you're playing at Royal Auckland, or wherever you're playing, it's neither here nor there. You kind of got this loneliness of being in the arena as a professional athlete. And that's what, I guess, one of the things I'm super proud of Ryan for is, yeah, he's forged a really nice career for himself, and he's had to take a bit of a windy road to get to the top. But he hasn't lost himself in all of that. He's still Ryan Fox, and he's pretty familiar with the things that make him successful. And he just happened to get all of those things to align, and most importantly, believed in himself, whether he was a Kiwi playing in, you know, one of the biggest tournaments in the world offshore, or whether he was playing in a tournament just at home. Ryan Fox knows who Ryan Fox is, and he was that to a T on Monday morning.
And I can honestly say this right now, Philip, you know, like all you Kiwi golf players, you're all humble, like yourself and Cambo, but Ryan, to me, he's your typical Kiwi bloke you might see down at the supermarket, you might see at your cafe, always friendly, always, you know, all considers himself no different to anyone else, which that's something I like. And of course, the impact of that on Monday, you're probably already seen it, aren't you, around golf clubs around the country?
Yeah, I think people are buoyed by it, right? And I think we, as sports fans, an athlete doing well anywhere around the world, any code, because of size of our country and the, you know, 1 or 2 degrees of separation just about of the 5 million people that call themselves Kiwis, you know someone who knows someone, right? So I think,
yeah,
with the Ryan's upbringing too, and playing a lot of junior and amateur golf here in New Zealand, he played in a lot of communities around the country, and so to his personality, he's connectable, you know, people feel like they know him well. He's made himself so available to media and has answered in so many different requests, whether they be, you know, of the highest level or whether they be something menial. He's been able to, you know, connect with the public and with the fans. And so it's right that I think this, you know, this achievement, and it's all him and his team. They have, you know, really you know, the unorthodoxy of the way he's gone about it, but they've resisted trying to turn him into some sort of machine. They've said, hey, this is the way Ryan does it. It's pretty, you know, we'll ride the waves. When it's off, it's off. But when it's good, it's pretty good. And, you know, they've backed him. And I think people can relate to that story a little bit in New Zealand, as opposed to feeling like we need to do it, you know, the way that they do it over there, or the way that the best people, or best players, or best athletes around the world that do it. Just do it your way. And so I think people and Kiwis can connect with that. And I'd expect that the game, and I think everyone kind of felt a little bit better this past week in New Zealand sport, and kind of leads into some pretty big sporting events coming up here over the next few weeks.
Oh, absolutely, Philip. And of course, what are you doing these days, Philip? Are you designing golf courses?
Yeah, that's pretty much that takes up most of my time nowadays. It's a bit of a passion of mine as a kid growing up, as a volunteer greenkeeper before I cottoned on to playing the game. And so since hanging up the clubs over a decade ago, I've spent most of my time consulting, advising golf clubs around the countryside, and working with a couple of councils on their golf assets, and a couple of private owners that are exploring some of their dreams and options as well with different golf facilities. So, yeah, that's what occupies most of my time. When the golf tournaments are down this part of the world over the summertime, spend a little bit of time behind the microphone as well, and enjoy that that connection to the pro game. And so, yeah, plenty of things around the game of golf keep me busy these days.
Well, I have to say, I've really enjoyed this interview, Phil. It was fantastic, and, you know, and we hope we can do this again in the near future. Have to say, it was a wonderful week, not only for New Zealand golf, but for New Zealand sports.
Absolutely. Concur 100% with that. Hopefully a couple of gold medals in Glasgow over the next couple of weeks. And then we've got
a little tour in South Africa. Yeah, God, I'm looking forward to that, mate. Absolutely looking forward to it. Hey, I'll leave you to it. You have a good rest of the weekend, Philip. Thank you so much.
Thanks, I'm
Cheers. Cheers. That was Philip Tatarangi. A fantastic interview. Okay, next up, we're going old school with Telfer and Macbeth.
Well, I started out down a dirty road. Started out all alone. And the sun went down as I crossed the hill. And the town lit up. The world gets still. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. Coming down is the hardest thing. Well, the good old days may not return. Rocks might melt, and the seed may burn. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. Coming down is the hardest thing. Some say life will beat you down and break your heart, steal your crown. So I've started out for God knows where.
guess I'll know when I get there. I'm learning to fly around the clouds. What goes up must come down.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Just a few quick announcements before I do my usual sponsorship spiel. Gordon Bray will be back on air next Saturday at around 11 o'clock as we look at what's happening in Australian sports. Also, another quick announcement. One of our program makers here, Oliver Lee, who does Island Calling, and also runs a publishing company. And of course, if you buy the Sunday Star Times, there is a free lift-out magazine, Rugby 2026, which previews not only the All Blacks going to South Africa, the All Blacks versus South Africa, also looks at the Black Ferns, the NPC, the Heartland Championship. So grab yourself a Sunday Star Times, and you'll be able to get that great magazine. And also a big shout-out to the Horse and Trap. They're based at... That's your local inbound here, and they're based at Free Enfield Street. And just to let you know that they have daily drinks and food specials. They have a fantastic tap beers and cider. They have great wine, and I have to say some of the food there is excellent. And the customer service, even better so. And they also have a fantastic function room. So their number is 09630 3055, or you can email them info@horseandtrap.co.nz. Anyway, we might as well get to our panel, and we're very privileged to have two absolute legends of New Zealand broadcasting. On line one, Brendan Telfer. G'day, Brendan.
Good morning, Aiden.
And on line two, and another legend, because Mr. John McBeth. Now, the only reason was, McBeth, you got so grumpy when I introduced Mr. Telfer as a legend and an icon of New Zealand broadcasting, and of course you were just introduced as just John McBeth. So I thought...
Well, I think that's fair enough.
Yeah.
Telfer's a legend because he told me.
We will get on to this right now, so we're going to start it off right now. Well, what a way to start off a Monday. Ryan Fox winning the Open, and I have to say, what a fantastic 36 holes. I remember last week I had Piper and Thompson on there, and I was trying to speak about the Open, and then I just said quickly, it looks like Ryan Fox has just made the cut at the Open. Hopefully it goes well. Then all of a sudden... All of a sudden we wake up on Monday morning and Ryan Fox is the Open Championship. Brendan, what do you think of that? Fantastic.
I was certainly awake. My watch, it was 5:24 a.m. when that part on the 18th was in, and I couldn't believe it. And Foxy, I noticed even on the television news last night, he's back here. He still can't believe it. I exchanged a few text messages with him during the week and keeps telling me, I still can't get my head around this. They're not one of the British Open. We've always called it an Open Championship, as it's officially known. It's extraordinary. But, there's no denying it. I mean, I recall the words of the commentators, the British commentators as well, who are just in awe of the golf that Ryan Fox played on that last hole. It was probably the most difficult hole, or second to most difficult hole on the day, because of the wind and the direction it was coming from, and there was the rain and all those other factors. The fairways, at one stage where the ball was landing from the tee, was only 15 metres wide. Now, it's not much more than half the length of a cricket pitch. And if you didn't make it on the fairway, your ball was in thick, almost unplayable rough. But Foxy said to his caddy, I'm going Sydney or the bush here, as they say, across the Tasman. He took out his driver, smashed it 330 yards, and then put that beautiful 9-iron into the green and made the putt. And they were saying, his commentators, is that it's one of the most memorable finishes in the history, modern history, of the Open Championship, the golf that Ryan Fox played on that last hole. I mean, for British commentators to be saying that about a New Zealand golfer was mind-boggling.
Absolutely. John, what was your thoughts on that? Brilliant, wasn't it?
Totally. And I think what the commentators, and I agree with you, Brendan, for them to be so glowing in their comments about Ryan was remarkable. But it does prove, doesn't it, that we know him as a, you know, even though we don't know him personally, probably most New Zealanders, we know him as a good bugger. We know that he has got no out-and-out ego like we see some of the, you know, the top-flight golfers have. He gets on with most of the players, it seems, or they get on with him. He certainly doesn't sort of offend people. I love the way they talked about his speed of play, which has been a trademark for him. I love the way we could see him and they talked about it. Look at Fox. He's like a caged lion. He can't stand still, and he just did not stand still from the moment his ball hit the green on the 18th till the moment he received the claret jug. You know, he didn't stop. He was prowling and watching and anticipating. And then as soon as Burns had played his putt, I think the camera crew, the director, must have been caught by surprise, the TV director, because they only just got there in time to see Fox sink that putt. He was so quick. And as he said, I don't think he probably remembers too much about it. It was exhilarating to watch. I was nervous watching him do it. I was, you know, sweaty palms and that. So imagine what he was like if we were just watching it and getting uptight about it. So a remarkable achievement. One of the greatest sporting achievements, I think, from a New Zealand point of view, certainly of this century. And when we think that Bob Charles did it in 1963, and we had to listen to it on radio, and probably got some black and white coverage emailed out, so we could watch it a couple of days later. You know, it's just remarkable. I can't stop talking about it, and people just still say, what did you think, you know, it was great.
Absolutely brilliant. And just before we get on to the next subject, just to another announcement by the station. Anyone wanting to listen to the All Ireland football final, Kerry versus Mayo, it is live on Planet 104.6 FM through Oliver Lee from Ireland Calling. So I'll have more details put up on my Facebook page. Anyway, we're talking about greatness to probably the worst match of football I've seen in this brilliant tournament, John. We watched Spain beat Argentina. I don't know what was worse, the game itself, the halftime show, or the aftermatch. I'll just start it off with you, John.
Yeah, it was a disappointing end, but just shows how much is at stake in this. Petulance and aggression and dirty play and also, I think, one team going in with an attacking frame of mind and the other not. But, I mean, when you get a situation where, Argentina had one shot on goal, did they, in the entire 90 minutes? Whereas Spain, on the other hand, were able to deliver more shots. But I think most people would go back and just watch the playoff for third and fourth and say, that's what we'd like to see. What were the 9 goals in that game? a bit different to what we'd seen. I was really disappointed, but I wasn't surprised. You know, Spain had only conceded 1 goal in the entire tournament, so cracking their defence was always going to be difficult. And, you know, they just shut down the key playmakers. Disappointing. Disappointing. But, you know, the great thing is that the head of the FIFA is a great friend of Donald Trump's, and the two of them look good together.
Oh, my God, and this is where I have to go to Mr. Telford. Now, obviously, after watching the excitement of the golf earlier, then you watched a very much stalemate game, then you had to endure a terrible halftime show, and then you had to see the two Ronnies going up presenting the trophy, Brendan.
Well, I disagree with you guys. I thought it absolutely a thrilling final. I mean, it's exactly what you normally get in a World Cup final because the stakes are so high. And the famous football coach, he's retired now, Arsene Wenger, who once said to his team, he was coach of the Arsenal team, said, if you don't concede any goals in a game of football, you can't lose a game of football. It's not like in rugby, you say, well, you know, if you have a tight defence, there's a good chance you're going to win the game. It doesn't. There's all sorts of other ways to score in rugby other than tries. But in football, if you don't concede a goal, you can't lose. Well, you could lose, I suppose, in a penalty shootout, but you can't lose in regular time. And because so much is at stake in that World Cup final, it's hardly surprising. No, she should be disappointed that teams take a very defensive attitude in the initial stages of the game. And then, okay, Spain were the better team. They, in fact, John's comment there about the attempts on goal, I remember seeing that a caption that came up right near the end of the game, I think it was in regular time, that Spain had had 16 had attempts on goal. Spain 16, Argentina 0. And So you've got to give a lot of credit to Spain. I mean, they tried to play football, attacking football. That's their game, and they deserved to win. They were the best team. I'm just spouting a bit here from a member of my family who I've got a son who lives in Spain, and he's been there for 5 years. He's a complete football fanatic. And he said to me before the championship started, Dad, tell me how you think, because he knows I'm not a football fanatic, I take an interest in it. Tell me who's going to win. I said, I had no idea. I said, but I'll tell you who I think are the four finalists. And I went, Brazil, Argentina, England, and Spain. And he said, oh, that's bad, Dad. He said, no. He said, because I'm in some sort of sweepstake in where he lives in Valencia, and he, at the pub where they drink, him and his mate. And he said, I have gone for an England-Spain final. And I nearly fell out of my chair. I said, oh, come on, Joe, that's his name. I said, England? England aren't going to make the World Cup final, you know, in a no-show. And he said, Dad, this is a very good English team. No, don't underestimate it. Forget about all of the terrible showings they've had in the past. They will should get the very least make the semi-finals, and I expect them to be in the final, and they'll probably lose to Spain. So he picked the winner. And so England, I thought terribly sorry for England. They deserve probably to be in the final, you know, but that's sport, isn't it? It's like Ryan Fox.
Yeah.
I mean, the luck factor is never far away from the big moments in sport. Well, that's, you choose any sport, right? Cricket, golf, football, the luck.
I watched it with my wife, and you know, she wouldn't watch too much football, but we were both interested to see what would happen. And I said, I wouldn't be surprised if they'd both gone out with the attitude, well, let's get through to a penalty shootout, because it just was heading that way, wasn't it? You're quite right. It's the nature of a final. Yeah.
Well, just Brendan, what was your thoughts on the two Ronnies coming out?
I mean, they deserve each other, Trump and Infantino. I mean, there he is this week, I noticed, in the wake of the World Cup final, singling out a couple of those Argentinian players for waving a Malvinas flag, saying there's no place for politics in football. It's completely wrong. And here's the clown who took a phone call from Trump about that red card given to an American player in one of the earlier matches, and then he turns around and gets it reversed. If that's not political involvement in football, what is? I think he's a disgrace to football, in my opinion.
Well, I'll tell you something right now. When you've got a guy like Seth Blatter, now you can, without sounding, had very much, as remember the old series minder, we have very much Arthur Daly tendencies. But I would say even he's coming out and saying this guy is bad for football. That must mean a lot.
Remember what he did last year? He conjured up this idea of awarding Donald Trump a peace prize because he missed out on the big peace prize, the Nobel Prize for Peace. So Infantino got some silly trophy that he got made, called it a function, invited Trump and gave it to him for the peace that he had brought to the world. And a couple of months later, he's invading Iran. Oh, no.
I just don't get it. I don't get it. Anyway.
You watch out, Brendan. He might be listening. He's probably got people over here sending, oh, look, we've just heard this from Brendan Telfer. He thinks you're a clown. Well, I'll get hold of him.
I can just imagine what Trump would say, that Brendan Telfer. Oh, anyway, sticking with you, Brendan. Commonwealth Games, well, it's obviously this morning we won two medals in the pool, two silvers, Lewis Claybird and Erica Fairweather. But I'm looking at this now. I know, Brendan, you have called many Commonwealth Games in your broadcasting career. In fact, you were even called to win a bronze medal at Edmonton in 1978. But has the Kiwi public, has it lost its interest? How relevant? Like, to me, I love the Commonwealth Games. I think it's been it's some of my childhood memories. But for a new generation of New Zealanders, what does this mean?
Yeah, it's certainly lost a lot of its glam and consequently its ranking as a world event. When John and I started way back in the 1970s, the Commonwealth Games were second to the Olympic Games. There weren't world championships and all these other sports and regional champion, world quasi championships as well. And so it was only a small hop from the Commonwealth Games into the Olympic Games. But it had been overtaken. I mean, early 1980s, like swimming and track and field athletics introduced the world championships in their sports. And gradually, these events, certainly in track and field, and John can speak more authoritatively on swimming, but certainly in track and field, winning a gold medal in track and field is not absolutely up there with a gold medal in the same event at the Olympic Games, but it's not much behind it. And it's actually harder to win a gold medal in the World Athletic Championships because they have more competitors there than they allow in athletics at the Olympics. So the sports have kind of evolved to have their own championships, and the Olympic Games will always be the Olympics. They'll never go away, and that's accepted. But Commonwealth Games is a victim, I think, of the growth of all of these other world championships. And I think you asked those two swimmers this morning who missed out on gold medals, what would you prefer, to win a gold medal at the Commonwealth Games or the World Championships? I'd say there'd be no delay at all in their answers. They'd rate the World Championships ahead of Commonwealth Games. They have a lot of financial problems. I was pleased to see a BBC report this week that said that Glasgow is staging these Commonwealth Games for £190 million. That's about $420 million New Zealand dollars. The previous, the last two or three of the Commonwealth Games have cost well over £1 million. So there's some hope for the Commonwealth Games that they can continue. What I'd like to see is that the countries who are competing help to pay for the Commonwealth Games. If it's only $400 million that you need, and okay, you don't build any flash stadiums, and they don't need to for a 10-day sporting event, but $400 million between all these rich countries in the Commonwealth, England, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, and one or two others, what's $400 million, six or 10 ways every 4 years? So I hope they have a future. I really enjoyed that. I don't know how John felt. I really enjoyed that opening ceremony yesterday. I thought it had a nice, homey, village kind of feel about it all. And it captured what the Commonwealth Games is about. Friendship.
Of course. Yeah.
And it was great. But its future, I think, is dubious.
John.
Yeah, I think it's going to have another total rethink of it. You're right in everything you said there, Brendan, or agree with it, whether you're right or not. But the fact that for the athletes, if they were really honest, those that have been to World Championships and Olympic Games and that would say, this really is important to me, but it's not as important as, a World Cup or a World Championship or an Olympic Games. It has always been an aspiration for young athletes all the sports that are involved in the Commonwealth Games. To attend a Commonwealth Games and win a medal is fantastic. I think we would get more New Zealand interest in it if, in fact, there was a move afoot to host a Commonwealth Games of some sort in New Zealand. And I think I've often said that we as, the fourth, I think, most successful Commonwealth country at Commonwealth Games, really owe it to New Zealanders and to the Commonwealth Games itself to put our hand up and say, yep, let's host something. And I've often suggested that we could do a Commonwealth Games
which reflects New Zealand. We could have things like the coast to coast as a Commonwealth Games. We could have a, you know, sort of yachting as a Commonwealth Games. You know, stuff that's not going to cost us millions of dollars. We don't want to be set up with, we have to build new stadium pools facilities, because we have got some good facilities, good enough, spread around the country. But whether that would meet with satisfaction from Commonwealth countries, I don't know. But I think we've got to show some interest.
Brendan, Sorry, Brendan, you go ahead.
I think the problem with that, John, is, I mean, it's been bandied around a bit, the idea of having a Commonwealth Championship for the individual sports, but then you lose that lovely kind of Commonwealth unity across nations and across cultures, which we saw alive and well and blossoming in that opening ceremony yesterday. So, I don't know, you know, it's a tough one. I mean, when you look back now, they've had these problems for about 10 or 12 years. Durban, when was Durban that was supposed to have happened? Was it 2014, I think?
Yes.
And they pulled it up. So that's 12 years ago. And then Victoria, the state, pulled out of this one. And so it looks like it's, you know, heading, I'm afraid, for the knackers yard. And I don't quite know how they can, as you've suggested, whether that is a one solution or whether they just do this cut down Commonwealth Games. I mean, there's only 10 sports in Glasgow, down from 20 they had 4 years ago at the last games in Birmingham. And I don't think it's losing anything by only having 10 sports. John, do you?
No, I'm quite happy with that. And that's, you know, obviously an option, isn't it, to say, you know, in Auckland we can have, or Christchurch with its new facilities, we could run a Commonwealth Games of 10 or 12 sports. You know, I think it would be, wouldn't take too much imagination.
Can I just say this, gentlemen, just cutting in here, I think they've got, obviously it's in India in 2030. If New Zealand was to host it, and if the costs weren't that great, I think New Zealand could really get the Commonwealth Games, could boost the Commonwealth Games, just because I think the sporting experience of coming to New Zealand is brilliant for a lot of these athletes, and spread it around the country. You know, have Auckland having something, have Taupo to have your triathlon, have Wellington to have something, have Christchurch, maybe have the opening ceremony in Christchurch.
Yeah, there's all those possibilities which might play out. But, I mean, Ahmedabad having it in 4 years' time, I think the first time the Olympic Commonwealth Games were in India wasn't an absolutely roaring success from every point of view. So they've got a bit of work to do there to make up for the occasion a few years back recently. I think it was 2010, was it, that they went to India. So everywhere you look, there's problems, but it'll be pretty if it's lost. But the other important thing about the Commonwealth Games, from what I see, is that it may have lost its status in comparison with the Olympics and overtaken by these World Championships, but it is a very important stepping stone for athletes who want to succeed at the Olympic Games. And I know my dear departed friend John Davies used to always say, I'm always pushing for my athletes to get to the Commonwealth Games, where the way they learn to run a race that lasts for 3 or 4 days. You've got semi-finals and you've got finals. That doesn't happen in normal track and field events, or swimming carnivals for that matter, I suppose. But it does at the Commonwealth Games, and it's a great way of blooding youngsters into the tough regime they have to get their head and their body around when they get to the Olympics.
Absolutely. Anyway, chaps, I was just going to say, obviously Nathan, we did have Nathan Cleary possibly coming to the Warriors in 2028. Well, he squashed that rumour this morning saying that he's not coming. But looking at Dave Rennie's squad, are you picking any bolters for the All Black squad to be announced this week to South Africa, John?
No, there are one or two names that are out there it'll be great that Fabian Holland comes back. We need him, and Tai Loa from Moana Pacifica as a big loose forward is being, the drums are beating for him. I think all those who've been in the squad now will definitely go. Some might be a bit worried, but I don't think so. And then they just add a few more. This is going to be one hell of a tough tour. And if, you know, this time last year, when I heard that that still was coming up and seeing what the All Blacks were producing, I said, we might lose all nine games over there. But I think what we've seen in the last 3 weeks is encouraging. So
yep.
It'll be, I think it's a timely tour.
John, remember 1949 and the scoreline from the Test series there?
Yes, that's right.
4-0.
4-0. And then the other team lost two in Australia, didn't they?
They lost two tests in one day, actually. And neither of you probably could remember that, could you? Back that far?
No, 1949.
No. And I've been very respectful to you both.
I did see light of day that year.
What was that? Was that racing at Trentford?
I remember that bitter and twisted English rugby writer John Reason, who John will record. He wasn't a bad bloke. Yes. When you got him, had a few beers. But he once reminded me of that 4-0 scoreline. He said, the scoreline was 4-0 in that Test series, and the All Blacks were lucky to get nil.
On that note, gentlemen, thank you so much for making yourselves available. Brendan, thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you for making yourself. Mate. And, guys, have a good weekend.
Excellent. Cheers. Thanks, Simon. Cheers. Bye.
That was, and that is us done for the day. Thank you very much.